Hi there. Welcome to the Pocket Contemplative. I'm Dave Smelser. So glad you're with us. So today we're going to look at what I'm calling the OG contemplative how-to book. It's a book called The Cloud of Unknowing. So it's a dusty old book from the 14th century, but it's a really pivotal book in terms of how Christians, at least, have thought about contemplative prayer ever since. So in modern day, probably the most famous contemplative approach that I'm aware of is a thing called centering prayer, which was developed and popularized by a monk named Thomas Keating in the 1970s, and it came directly from The Cloud of Unknowing. So all to say is a lot of what we talk about here has been super influenced by this book, and I thought maybe we should talk about it a bit and some of the ins and outs of what is the how-to it's proposing. How should we think about the world that it's left us, and what should we do about it? How can we learn from it? Now, let me give you a little history of Christian contemplation up until The Cloud of Unknowing. So clearly, in other traditions, Buddhism certainly, contemplation is as old as the tradition. It's central. But in Christianity, it goes back to the Hebrew Bible with things like "Be still and know that I am God" from the Psalms thousands of years ago. It has some parallels in the New Testament. And then in the 300s, you've got these major figures called the desert saints that we've talked about here occasionally, where that's the whole shtick, is they're in the desert to learn to be contemplatives, and they're trying to pass on what they know. So that's biggity. And then a couple hundred years later, we get this figure, Pseudo-Dionysius, who's trying to learn from all what the desert saints talked about and put it in more contemporary terms of his era. That then lasted to people like the author of The Cloud of Unknowing, who we don't know, who's anonymous for reasons I'll explain in a minute. So the tradition was very much there, but it wasn't really practiced, historians don't think. It was really a very much a minority view. What was the majority view? Well, Christianity became the state religion since the 300s with Constantine, and so gathering together with other Christians under some authority structure, believing the right stuff, hearing preaching about the Bible, and maybe having what we would call the faith tradition, which is an important tradition, which comes from very hopeful scriptures like, if you have just a little bit of faith, you can move a mountain. God's all powerful. God can do anything. So that's sort of the brew that Christianity, in very bold strokes, was until the 14th century. Well, what happened in the 14th century? The bubonic plague happened in the 14th century, and it was a calamity that's hard to even reckon with its severity. So we think, I think a half of England's population died in the bubonic plague and a third of Europe's. Well, Christianity was certainly centralized in those places, not exclusively there, but centralized there. And so could Christianity emerge from such a calamity? I mean, think about the scope of that, right? We've just gone through a horrible pandemic here. COVID killed a million plus Americans. And of course, I don't know the worldwide figures, but it's terrible. But imagine if COVID had killed 175 million Americans in the same period of time we've just lived through. I think we would feel it far more profoundly. And that might be in the scope of what people were feeling in that era. There's affecting famous stories like mothers leaving children to die alone in the streets who infected children. Why would any loving mother do such a thing? Well, it's because if you were to go up and comfort your child, you would assuredly catch it yourself. So you'd die. Then your family wouldn't have a mother. Secondly, if you went back to the family, you'd kill them all. So just psychological torment is what this is. Now, in a faith tradition, what should you do? Well, you should pray. And God's all powerful. God can move you past this. He can at least protect your family, right? Or maybe your friends, city, country, maybe the whole plague can be taken care of through prayer. Didn't work. The thing was just a bulldozer. And so the fear was that after, whenever this was over, that Christianity would go through what in the 20th century would be kind of an existentialism phase, which is God is out of the picture and now it's just how to live. It's certainly an important thing to know on its own terms. But nonetheless, God has not proven to be out of the picture since the bubonic plague. Why not? Well, it's because this explosion of biggie contemplative teaching came out of it, The Cloud of Unknowing being a central one. But Julian of Norwich, I believe Thomas a Kempis in France, some major figures came out of it. Why did they come out of it? Well, it's because contemplative spirituality, they began to have this insight, maybe from God, was a way through. And maybe it was a way through that we always should have known about and always should have been practicing. And it would have helped all those years when there wasn't a bubonic plague and can certainly possibly get us through this thing, was the feeling. All right, so there's my introduction to the context for The Cloud of Unknowing. We're going to walk through it in a minute. And anyway, that's what we're going to do. So before we do that, let me just mention, as I do every podcast, there's plenty more you can be exploring if the stuff we talk about on the Pocket Contemplative interests you. One, you can go to thepocketcontemplative.com. That should be easy enough to remember, where all these podcasts exist. It will also, if you click on the menus above, take you to this broader website called journey-on.net, journey-on.net, which talks about groups you could join with people from all over the world who are interested in this stuff, and you can make friends, et cetera, et cetera. So check out those resources and let me know what you think. All right, let's get going with the OG Contemplative How-To Book. So I'm going to be looking at some of the insights from The Cloud of Unknowing as filtered through this author I mentioned a couple of podcasts back, a man named Gary Neil Hansen, who wrote a book called Kneeling with Giants, Learning to Pray with History's Best Teachers. Mr. Hansen is a seminary professor, and so he's teaching pastors-to-be, and he's teaching spirituality, right? So he teaches all these different methods of how to pray. We looked at this thing called the Jesus Prayer from Russian Orthodoxy a couple times ago, just for one model that perhaps you haven't experienced if you haven't been in the Orthodox tradition. So he has a chapter on the Cloud of Unknowing, which I'm going to look at some of his insights. I've been chatting about it with friends in the last few weeks, and what I've discovered is the cloud, which I've read not all of, but a good chunk of, one, the cloud is just austere. It's not a cuddly book. You read Julian of Norwich. Julian is very, her personality is right on her sleeve, so you get a feeling for who she is. And that's true of almost every author I know. There's plenty of Christian authors, including some great ones I don't particularly like, and they kind of leave me cold, but I do know who they are. With the author of The Cloud, you don't really get, it's very recessive. And the author wanted to be anonymous because, I don't know, spiritual reasons, didn't want the glory, et cetera, but wanted to get this information out there. And so as I've been chatting with friends about The Cloud and some of these insights via Hansen and some of my own thoughts, the author can come across as sort of chilly. Well, that's not popular. Secondly, Hansen, as you will see, talks a fair amount about the virtues of feeling nothing when you pray, which he is asserting The Cloud talks about. And Hansen speaks very warmly about feeling nothing. Well, until we really teased out some of that in a number of conversations, that, let me just say, was not like a draw to this. People want to feel something. They want to feel happy. They want good, you know, emotions are important in life. Feeling nothing just didn't sound appealing. One, Hansen will make his own appeal for why it's a great thing and useful. But if I can make a personal pitch for that before we get to some of the specifics, I really was reflecting as this was being teased out over these conversations, how useful that view of feeling nothing has been to me personally. So I've mentioned on some podcasts from years back, my way into contemplative practice after having been a pastor of a large church in Cambridge, Massachusetts for many years, where I'm teaching, you know, Christianity. But I wasn't teaching contemplation. I didn't really know much about contemplation as most, I wasn't hearing about it from many other sources either. Why did I get into it? I got into it because I took some kind of risky steps in life and our whole family did. And I suddenly felt the weight of those pressures. They were risky after all, and the risk did not seem entirely unlikely to be realized. And so I'm trying to figure out how can I mitigate against the risk that we don't just crash and burn from this risky choice that my wife and I made. And so that felt very stressful. Now, I had a ton of spiritual tricks from that I've been taught teaching about for years with some degree of success that have worked for me and maybe worked for many people. And so I pulled out my bag of tricks. They didn't do the trick. I was still feeling totally stressed. And that just felt like, well, then where do I go? And through a series of events, I suddenly started exploring this contemplative thing. Super helpful. Because what is contemplative spirituality telling me to do? Well, it's saying, okay, here's a prayer time, Dave. In a prayer time, you sit down for some length of time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes is often recommended by the centering prayer people, for instance. You sit down and you just focus on your breathing and you're trying to be present to this moment and God in this moment. And that's it. But here's what's going to happen when you do. It happens to everybody. Your thoughts are going to intrude or your emotions are going to intrude. So you want to notice them, maybe even name them, welcome them. Don't try to shove them away. See them there, but then gently return to your breathing, maybe using the sacred word that Centering Prayer talks about and The Cloud talks about. That's the whole deal. So I did that. Well, for me, what was I feeling when I first was starting this? I was feeling overwhelming anxiety, fear, confusion, you know, all those sorts of things. So I would sit down to be still and they'd be everywhere. That would be what was in my consciousness. So I would do all this. Hey there, anxiety. Hey there, fear. Hey there, confusion. Hey there, not knowing. Whatever. I see you. Welcome. How's it going? Okay, I'm going to return to my breath now. And the idea was that if you do that, they would just float away like they're clouds that pass. And sure enough, they would. So did I feel nothing? Absolutely. The nothing I felt, my options for feeling were feeling fearful, anxious, confused, whatever, or feeling still. And so some of my friends, when I talked about that, said, well, yeah, but that's not nothing. You're feeling peace. You're feeling calm. Fair enough. Whatever I was feeling, though, it felt like what the cloud of unknowing is calling nothing. And what did I get out of that deal? Oh, I think after some years of practicing this, I think I'm at this moment, fingers crossed, knock wood. I'm sure it'll be different in a week. You know, I'm on a stretch where I'm about as happy as I remember being as an adult. Why is that? Have all those stresses gone away? I got plenty of stresses in my life. We all do. But I'm just doing this thing, which the cloud has such high regard for, and which talks about feeling nothing. So it's just a little forewarning about how to think about that as we talk about it, but also maybe an endorsement that hanging in, there's a useful how-to quality to this that can help our emotions along with some other things in life. Okay, again, the book we're going to have as a mediator in the cloud of unknowing stuff is this book called Kneeling with Giants, Learning to Pray with History's Best Teachers by Gary Neil Hansen. So here's what he says is at the heart of the cloud of unknowing. He says, rather than sensing the presence of God in prayer, we enter a cloud of unknowing and stay there. This would be similar for if you've been following these podcasts. We talked some time back with this, was it 1500s, abbess named Teresa of Avila. Her later stages of faith, her later rooms in the mansion of your faith are like this. It's where you are just in, you're with God personally, you feel God. Pseudo-Dionysius, this guy I mentioned from 1,000 years before this, had talked about this as we've talked about sometimes earlier on this podcast, the darkness above the light, that God is so brilliantly light, it's giving out so much radiance and vision and things like that, that our senses, as we get closer and closer to God, it's like getting closer and closer to the sun. And what happened is our senses can't take it all in, so it goes dark. That sounds bad, but the good news is you're so close to God then, and you just exist in that unknowing, in that darkness, and that nothingness, but boy, God is really there, and that's a really good thing. That's the cloud of unknowing. So this is back to Hansen. As with many simple things, getting into this cloud of unknowing, it's exceptionally difficult to do. When people hear they are to pray without senses or emotions or words or ideas, they often have trouble figuring out what they are actually supposed to do. Imagining this as their prayer life for the rest of their days can be daunting. So Hansen, with all his practices, this is his report of a seminary class he does with pastors in training. He's teaching them this wide spectrum of prayer options that they probably haven't learned from their tradition because it's from all Christian traditions. And his suggestion is, one, it could be helpful for you to have options because sometimes you pray for a bit, it quits working. And then just try another one and there will be one there for you when you need it. And then that's something you can pass on to your congregants as well. They have options, is his pitch. And so his method in this class he teaches is to teach each of these things for 2 weeks. And then for the 2 weeks, the students are supposed to practice the practice that is the focus of the 2 weeks and then report on how it goes. So you get these comments, as we'll get a lot in the rest of this podcast, from these students about their reaction. So here's an example. When they try this sort of prayer out, the typical response is, I just don't see how doing this is actually prayer. Meditation, perhaps, but prayer with no request, no conversation, no words of any kind. Well, yeah, it's prayer, he says, contemplative prayer. Contemplation, by definition, is about looking at something. Contemplative prayer directs our gaze towards God. It fits the ancient definition of prayer as communion better than today's common view, at least in Protestantism, that prayer is conversation. Actually, with this form of contemplative prayer, we approach the territory of mysticism. The cloud of unknowing aims for a direct, unmediated encounter with God. Again, you're in this space so close to God that you can't take it all in your senses, but you're right there. And we've talked about mysticism, of course, recently with Jason M. Baxter in a couple of podcasts. Well, he asked, might there be good news in what the cloud calls feeling nothing when we pray? This is my forewarning was about this answer. He says, personally, I find the cloud's approach extremely comforting. I don't think I'm alone in feeling inferior when people start to talk about their tremendous experiences in prayer. They sensed God's presence or heard God's voice or were overcome by feelings of love or something. The rest of us cringe and think, I guess I really am no good at prayer at all. We have done our time. We've shown up at prayer for years or decades. We felt nothing. Where was God? Why do we never get any of the goodies? To all who pray and feel absolutely nothing, the cloud of unknowing says, that's good. That's the sign you really are in God's presence, feeling nothing. We know God is there because we feel nothing, says Hansen, quoting the cloud. if we feel something, we can know for sure that it is something in creation. It's not the direct and mediated presence of God, which is beyond us. And as an analogy where he tries to tease this out. So here's what he says. I compare it to the difference between the two-dimensional world of a cartoon and the three-dimensional existence of the artist who draws the cartoon. If the cartoon characters came to life on the page, they might hear about their artist who lives in a mysterious third dimension of depth, but they would be incapable of stepping off the page to experience depth. They could never wrap their paper-flat imaginations around it. Even if they cried out in little speech bubbles, "Oh, artist, I believe in you. Help me understand your depth." Any attempt at drawing in 3D for them would just be an illusion. Similarly for us, stuck in our world, we can't really grasp the timeless eternity of the God who invented time, except in terms of going on and on, and of time going on and on. And we can only imagine God existing in a place, even though God created the very space of our universe. Our thinking's limited by the categories of the created world, and so we can't ever grasp God as God is. We're 2D, he's 3D, etc. And notice the metaphor inherent in the word grasp. It implies that what we grasp must be small enough to be surrounded by our hand. We can't do that. So hence contemplative prayer, where we acknowledge we can't do it. We are the 3D beings in company, the 2D beings in company with the 3D being, or we're 3D beings in company with a 12-dimensional being, whatever. We have no analogy for it, except that we just have to stay present. Now, there's a quote, I'm paraphrasing here, from The Cloud that I kind of liked. I liked the quote, and I liked how Hansen works with it. Here's the quote. God cannot be thought, but God can be loved. God cannot be thought, but God can be loved. So he has some questions and answers here from his students, and then his answer, of course. Question, but how can I think about God if Dionysian, from again Pseudo-Dionysius, who influenced the author of The Cloud, if Dionysian spiritual theology teaches that God is bigger than my mind's capacity, we're 2D, it's 3D, etc. I can think about what God does, but I can't wrap my mind around what God is. Is this another paradox? And Hansen's answer, actually, no. Think is the wrong word. The attention you should aim towards God is loving. Thinking and loving are very different kinds of abilities. The Cloud puts it like this, but no man can think of God himself. He can most certainly be loved, but not thought. So another question. Is this sort of what Brother Lawrence talked about? And maybe I'll do a podcast. I've done one way back when, but Hansen has a chapter on Brother Lawrence, tying him in with his mentor, Teresa Avila. Brother Lawrence tried to teach us how to constantly be in a sort of conversation with God, which could be a silent conversation. And that's the way to kind of always be with God. Well, here's a question from the student asking that. Isn't this basically the same as what we read in Brother Lawrence's The Practice of the Presence of God? His answer? The two are vastly different. Brother Lawrence has clear concepts of God in mind, and his way of prayer is constant verbal conversation. Now, I actually don't think that's entirely true. I just recently reread Brother Lawrence's Practice of the Presence of God. I think he's got a space for being silent in God's presence, but let's run with it as if that's the case. And I spent decades trying to learn that as if it were true, so yes. Brother Lawrence's way of prayer is constant verbal conversation. The Cloud turns away from concepts and sits in silence in God's presence. That's pretty different. Now, there's more than one cloud talked about in the Cloud of Unknowing. Of course, there's the Cloud of Unknowing itself, the important one where you're with God, but you can't see much. But there's a second cloud, which is called the Cloud of Forgetting. And to preview this, I think when I told my story of, oh, I'm full of anxieties and fears and questions about life, and I sit down to do my 20 minutes, say, of contemplative practice, so I'm following my breathing, and as thoughts come, I mean, I'm naming them and welcoming them, but then letting them pass like passing clouds, and then going back to my breathing, maybe using a sacred word, that. So I'm doing that. That moment where I notice all those things intruding on my being present with God in the present moment, and I let them pass like passing clouds, that is effectively employing the cloud of forgetting. It's taking stuff that's between me and God, because I'm trying to be present to God in this meditation thing, right? Those things are between me and God. They're passing clouds that I could fixate on, and that they block me being in God's presence until I can notice them, name them, let them gently go. Once they go into this other cloud, the cloud of forgetting, which is lower than me. If the cloud of unknowing at that prayer point, at least, is above me, as I let all those thoughts go, they sort of all find their way into the cloud of forgetting, which is behind me, between me and the created world. And that's an important cloud to understand, says the author of The Cloud of Unknowing. Here's how Hansen answers a question from a student about it. The question from the student, how am I supposed to quiet my mind so that I can give God my full attention? Answer from Hansen, actually, the process is exactly the opposite than quieting your mind. You can't quiet your mind first. You turn your attention towards God, and then as any kind of thought creeps in, you gently set it aside under the cloud of forgetting, which we've just described. The author of The Cloud of Unknowing wants you to bring a cloud of forgetting between yourself and all of creation. Since you're putting your attention directly on God, you must take your attention off absolutely everything that isn't God. You must choose to forget it. It's not that you develop permanent amnesia. Rather, while you pray, you set everything aside into the cloud of forgetting. Keeping this metaphor in mind helps make sense of this way of praying. If you're trying to gaze up towards God, but your attention is even partly on something in creation, then you're putting that thing above you, between you and God. And then he has a little dig at the Orthodox tradition here. I think the author of The Cloud of Unknowing would say that looking at icons while praying would place them between you and God in Orthodox practice. Well, let's talk about this sacred word for a minute that I've alluded to. It comes from the cloud. So here's a question from one of Hansen's students. My problem is boredom, the student says, and confusion. I need some help in keeping my attention on God moment to moment. Am I stuck? Hansen's answer is, our minds use words to direct our thoughts. The author suggests you use a word to draw your attention back to God, slowly repeating it inside your mind as you pray. That's the sacred word. I suspect that if pressed, he would say that even a word can be, quote, above us and therefore between us and God, but he offers three examples of words he thinks are helpful. The most important is God. Second, he suggests we repeat the word love. Third, he suggests that sometimes we should say, of all things, sin. He does not want us to think about particular sins. The word is to prompt a sort of inward general confession. I will admit I've never done the sin one before, so last week I did it a bit. I can't really describe what came up, but it was positive. You know, I was like, oh, that was kind of interesting and got me thinking about stuff, which I suppose it shouldn't have, but nonetheless, I gave it a go. So let's look back. If we were to ask Hansen from afar to refresh our memory and tell us what's the difference between prayer and meditation, I wonder what he'd say. And a student asks that. This does not really seem like prayer to me, complains the student. This seems more like meditation. Hansen's answer, and being a scholar, he gets all scholarly on us. Actually, he says, it is quite different from what people in the Middle Ages called meditation. Back then, meditation was an active mental activity. Typically, one would take a verse of scripture and ruminate it on it like a cow chewing its cud. What the cloud teaches is similar to more modern definitions of meditation. That gets a follow-up question. To me, this sounds a lot like meditation in Eastern religions. I've heard they also use mantras or repeated phrases that focus on emptying the mind. His answer, and he throws this guy John Maine under the bus here. We talked about him a couple podcasts back positively. Maine would like to use sort of words that you would say. So you're not filling yourself just with silence. You're using, you know, mantras to kind of keep yourself focused, but he has a Christian version of it. So anyway, he says, John Maine, a monk and priest who taught what he called Christian meditation, saw strong similarities between Hindu meditation and the cloud of unknowing. He was not inclined to emphasize the differences, and this has led to criticism. He learned meditation from a Hindu teacher before learning of Christian sources like the cloud, and that makes some suspicious. I am not convinced he interpreted the cloud accurately. The chief similarity, though, is repetition of a word. So there you go. There is a radical difference, he says, between the cloud and at least the stereotypical Western understanding of meditation in Eastern religions. This is not an exercise in relaxation or an attempt to empty the mind. This way of prayer intends to fill the mind, but to fill it with attention to God. Rational thoughts, images in the imagination, and feelings all get set aside because they're not God. Now let's go back to this feeling nothing thing, which again, I've given you my take on, and we kind of had to kick around among some of my friends who thought it felt like, is he saying we're supposed to be numb inside or dead inside? That's good. So let's look back at the alleged virtues of feeling nothing in prayer. Question from a student. Once I get good at it, can I expect to have some sense of God's presence? Hansen answers, no, you should expect to feel absolutely nothing. The author does note that God lets some people feel consolations in prayer, but he also notes that any such gift is up to God. Then he talks about these two distinctions called the active and contemplative life. So the most famous modern American contemplative, I'm guessing, is this guy, Father Richard Rohr, lives in Albuquerque. He runs a center called the Center for Action and Contemplation from this tradition. And that's not, the author of The Cloud of Unknowing did not create it. It goes back to the Desert Saints at the very least. But it's sort of a tier, the way the author presents it, and some of my friends didn't like this because it seems like he's very dogmatic about a hierarchy, that active is lower, contemplative is the higher one. But even so, I think most people who've talked about this in the tradition don't dismiss either. So maybe listen to this charitably. But so what he means by active is this. The author divides, says Hansen, both kinds of life, active and contemplative, into higher and lower parts, leading to a four-part kind of tier. The parts overlap, though. The higher part of the active life is really the same as the lower part of contemplative life. That means he actually describes three kinds of Christian living. The lower active life is actions of love, good and holy things that we do in this world. That sounds good. Above this comes spiritual practices like meditation on scripture, prayerful and studious disciplines that engage your mind and imagination. These make up both the higher part of active life and the lower part of contemplative life. So the level above that, the third level then, is the height of contemplation, when one moves beyond thinking to loving God directly, pushing upward into the cloud of unknowing and forgetting all created things, because the cloud of forgetting is behind us. This way of prayer is really for those called to the contemplative life. So one student says, I got a job. I got a family. This sounds like it's a full-time gig. And he says, yeah, the author of The Cloud of Unknowing says it's not for everyone. So anyway, keep that in mind. Protestants, though, often only approve of an active life, or at least one we do not create many structures for people. Excuse me, I've said this totally wrong. Let me go back. Protestants, looking at active versus contemplative, often only approve of an active life, or at least we do not create many structures, we Protestants, do not create many structures for people to pursue contemplation or any other kind of prayer as a life calling. That has been my experience. So I think he's right about that. I'm going to close by just looking at this with a very brief biblical model, which I won't describe if you're not familiar with it, but I'll allude to, and maybe that'll be helpful for some of us. So one question from a student, even if Christians in the past made more room for calling to a contemplative life, is it biblical? And Hansen's answer is, the author bases his view squarely on scripture, though in a traditionally Catholic way. He uses the biblical story of Mary and Martha. And maybe you can imagine that if you're familiar with the story, which again, I'm not going to get into. But Mary is the great contemplative, sitting at Jesus' feet. She is loving, not thinking, in just the way the cloud talks about. Martha is active, doing good things, cleaning the house, making sure Jesus feels at home, making sure things are taken care of. Martha is the active life, and that becomes this grid that might be an accessible grid for those of you familiar with the story to understand where the author of The Cloud of Unknowing is coming from. Anyway, there you have my little look at this OG contemplative how-to book. It has been so influential. So anyway, I just want to pitch it. It's a difficult read, but maybe even giving it a try on the ways we've talked about here might be a fun start into something for you, as it certainly, as I've alluded to already, has been for me. So anyway, so glad you've been here. Look forward to talking to you soon.